is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we'll talk with Dutch DeGay, an equipment specialist for the Army, about this gear that soldiers will be taking into the field in the future. But first, a glimpse into the origins of the universe. Last week, scientists at NASA and Princeton University announced findings from the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, or WMAP for short. That's a satellite that was launched in June of 2001 that orbits around a point in space about a million miles from the Earth. WMAP has been busy measuring cosmic microwave energy left over from the Big Bang, and that's an important measurement. We'll talk about that why. And scientists looking at the data from WMAP think they can now answer several long-standing questions in cosmology, such as, how old is the universe? What is the universe made of? What shape is the universe? How did the Big Bang lead to stars and galaxies? Big questions that lots of scientists have been trying to answer for years. Joining me now to talk about the WMAP project is one of its principal scientists. David Spergel is a professor of astrophysics at Princeton University and a member of the WMAP science team. Welcome to the program.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Big questions, big answers. Let's talk about WMAP. What does it actually measure?
What WMAP is, it's a satellite built in a collaboration between Princeton and Goddard that's out at about four times the distance of the moon. It's mapping the leftover heat from the Big Bang, looking at tiny variations in that leftover heat, variations at the level of a few millionths of a degree, and those variations are tracing variations in the properties of the universe just 380,000 years after the Big Bang.
So is it looking at visible light? Is it looking at radio waves? What kind of radiation?
It's looking at radio waves. It's looking at waves between the radio and the microwave. Mm-hmm. This cosmic background radiation is all around us. In fact, if you put your TV on UHF, it's about a couple percent of your static.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, your home TV, if you don't have cable, is a cosmic background radiation detector.
So you shouldn't curse out your TV for that static. You're actually doing an experiment.
That's right.
Let's talk about these very interesting questions that you're answering. How old is the universe?
Well, we can infer that the age of the universe is about 13.7 billion years. And we do that by looking at this pattern we see on the sky. We know the physical size of those hot and cold spots there. It's about 380,000 years after the Big Bang. The rough size is about 380,000 light years. We then measure the angular size of these spots, and we see thousands of them across the sky, and then use some geometry pretty much to infer the age of the universe.
Now, we've been talking about different ages of the age of the universe. It's been going up, down for years, for decades. Why do you think you've pinned it down better than anyone before?
Because our analysis is so simple. One of the nice things about the early universe is that the early universe is a very simple place. It's nearly perfectly uniform. There are tiny variations in density from place to place. The basic equations that describe the properties of the early universe are really undergraduate physics. Well, it's not simple. It's things that we understand pretty well, so we can do detailed calculations. What's remarkable is that the age has been fluctuating around for a while, from as small as 8 billion to 16 billion years. Over the past decade or so, the best estimates have kind of narrowed down to about 12 to 15 billion years based on the age of the oldest stars. And our estimate, while more precise, is very much consistent with these earlier measurements of age and end up giving us a very nice confirmation of the Big Bang model. I mean, that's the basic thing that our estimate is based on.
Mm-hmm. So you've confirmed then the validity of the Big Bang model.
Well, we've tested it in a number of ways. We can look at the age of the oldest stars, and the oldest stars are about a bit more than 12 billion years old based on Hubble telescope observations of what are called white dwarf stars. Mm-hmm. And our estimates based on these pattern of fluctuations give very similar numbers. That's a very nice test of a theory when you can measure the same thing in two different ways and get the same answer. Mm-hmm. Now, we do that a number of different ways. We can measure the abundance of atoms by looking at the shape of the spots. And we find that atoms make up about 4.4% of the total density of the universe. And astronomers using the Keck and Hubble telescopes measuring the abundance of deuterium, which is a fossil element from the very early universe, get very similar estimates for the density of atoms. Mm-hmm. So again, we measure things in two different ways, relying on very different sets of assumptions, and get similar answers. It has really reinforced the basic Big Bang theory.
And you know that 4% is a startling number. I mean, looking at your figures, that means you say 4% of the universe, just 4%, is made up of atoms, matter, right?
It's a very strange and bizarre universe that we live in. The stuff that we know, all, you know, from hydrogen to iron, all that good stuff is just a small fraction of the total energy density of the universe. About 6 times as much of the matter is in the form of something we call dark matter. That stuff that gravitates a lot like atoms. It, you know, it's attracted to the sun and the potential of our galaxy. But it doesn't seem to interact with either radiation or with ordinary atoms. Or if it does so, it interacts extremely weakly.
Mm-hmm.
Our best guess on what this dark matter is a whole new class of subatomic particles. So we don't know what makes up, you know, more than 80% of the mass of our galaxy. Perhaps even more disturbing is that 3/4 of the universe is in the form of what we call dark energy. This is basically energy that fills all of space. The form that's most likely, that, but based on our data, is something called a cosmological constant, an idea that actually Einstein first proposed when he developed his theory of general relativity. We now associate it with energy associated with empty space, and that seems to be most of the energy in the universe. And it is a model that is strange, with 96% of the universe in these really not understood forms. Yet one of the things that our data does is really reinforce this model. A lot of these ideas have been suggested by earlier astronomical data. For more than 2 decades, astronomers have known that most of the mass of our galaxy is in the form of something that's dark. And there's been growing evidence, particularly from data from supernovae, showing that the universe is accelerating, which has given us evidence for the dark energy.
As a layperson, I find it mind-boggling that 96% of the universe is made up of dark stuff that we have no idea what it is.
Yes.
It's not just me then, huh?
And it's what's we know it at an unusual state. On one hand, we understand the universe pretty well, in that once you let me posit those two things, I can then explain, my colleagues and I, the whole pattern we see on the microwave sky, looking at hundreds of thousands of points in the sky, a model based on the fluctuations in the early universe. We can then run it forward in time, calculate how galaxies should be distributed today, how gas clouds should be distributed when the universe was 1 billion years old, compare our observations to data from big galaxy surveys, data from the Hubble telescope and other telescopes taken in very different ways. And this model, with very few parameters, fits all of the data, which is what sort of the aim of our scientific theories. Yet it's a model that has these two ingredients that we don't understand. So as often happens in science, we answer some questions, and we raise and deepen others as our data improves.
It's just an amazing thing, you know, to think that it's so much, you know, that the model seems to work, but you have no idea what's inside the box.
Right.
Let's talk about that early. How far back does this picture that you've got from WMAP, how far back does it take us toward the beginning of the universe?
Well, what we directly measure is radiation in this map, the stuff we see, these microwave photons. Most of them last interacted with matter and radiation only 380,000 years after the Big Bang. Big Bang is about 13.7 billion years ago, and about 380,000 years after the Big Bang, electrons and protons combined to make hydrogen. At that point, the universe became transparent to this radiation, so it then moved freely from then to now. So what we see are patterns that we're measuring and directly measuring 380,000 years after the Big Bang. But we can use these patterns, because they're spread over such large scales to actually tell us about the first moments of the Big Bang. And one of the things that the data has done is provided more evidence and some key tests of a theory called inflation. Inflation is an idea that the during the beginnings of the Big Bang, in the first trillionth of a second, the universe underwent a very rapid period of acceleration in which a very small region expanded to be much larger than the visible universe we see today. That theory makes a number of predictions. One, that the geometry that we all learned in high school, Euclidean geometry, is valid on the largest scale of the universe. Another...
Let me just stop you there. That means that the universe is flat.
That's right.
Parallel lines never meet in the universe.
Yep.
Okay.
And the other, that the pattern of fluctuations that we see should be very random. There should be no very hot spots, no very cold spots, no clustering of hot spots in one area. The inflationary model makes very specific predictions for the patterns that we see, and our data confirms those predictions. And the model makes predictions for the relationship between the temperature map we see and another map we make called a polarization map. We look at the glare produced by scattering. You know, you look at it on a hazy day at the sky, you'll see polarized light as the sunlight scatters off of haze in the atmosphere. The same thing happens in the early universe. We can look at the polarized light. That polarized light gives us another way of probing the properties of the universe back then. And this, we see the correlation between polarization and temperature predicted by this model. So we have really reinforced the evidence for this universe undergoing this accelerating phase during its first moments.
Mm-hmm. Professor Spergel, if we don't know what the dark energy and the dark matter is made out of, how do we find out what it is?
Well, probably different methods for different things. We've been looking for the dark matter in a number of different ways. One possibility is that it was clustered in the form of massive black holes. Astronomers have looked for those by looking for gravitational lensing. If these black holes were to pass in front of distant stars, they would magnify those stars. We haven't seen that. We've ruled out much of that possibility. Another possibility, I think the one that I and many others favor, is that it's in the form of some subatomic particles, relics from the first moments of the Big Bang.
Well, how do you find what those are, or even figure out what they are?
One of those things where to find out what's deep in, what's coming in from the sky, from space, you actually go deep underground into a mine. So that these are particles that we think they will interact with matter, but extremely weakly.
Have a name for them?
They're called WIMPs. There are about a million of them streaming through your hand each second, and you don't notice them because most of them just pass right through. And, you know, maybe once a day, one of those particles hits an atom in your hand or somewhere in your body and leaves a tiny amount of heat that you don't notice. Well, in order to detect that, you better have a very sensitive experiment and be free from all other sources of background. So what some of my physics colleagues are doing are they're going deep down into mines and building experiments to look directly for this dark matter. Another approach is to look at astronomical systems that have these dark matter, clusters of galaxies and the like, and to learn about some of the properties by watching how it interacts gravitationally. One of the things that our data does is rule out some of the possible candidates for the dark matter. We don't know what it is, but we now have a slightly better idea what it's not.
All right, Dr. Spergel, can you stay with us a few more minutes?
Sure.
We're going to have to take a break, and this is so fascinating. We're going to come back and talk lots more with David Spergel, an astrophysicist at Princeton. Take your calls, because everybody's interested in knowing where we came from, where we're going. We'll see if we can answer some of those questions. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking with Dr. David Spergel, professor of astrophysics at Princeton University, about new evidence collected from the WMAP satellite about the age of the universe and hopefully answering some of these interesting questions that we all have about where we're going, where we're coming from, all kinds of... These are philosophical questions, a lot of them, Dr. Spergel, aren't they, that you try to answer? These are questions people have been asking for centuries.
And what's exciting is that we can now, you know, build a satellite and address some of these questions, at least directly experimentally.
Mm. Let's go to the phones because lots of people have questions to ask. Let's go to Chris in Portage, Michigan. Hi, Chris.
Hi. How are you today?
Hi. Go ahead.
First, I'd like to say I wish Science Friday were on 5 days a week. I just absolutely love this show.
Thank you.
The question I have is going to take a moment to set up, but basically it's like this. A few weeks ago, Science Friday had a discussion with a man who found variances in the speed of light and said at that time that no conclusive experiments have been done as to speed of individual spectrums of the speed of light, as opposed to like ultraviolet versus infrared. And dark matter is based on the difference between the observed mass of the galaxy and that measured by redshift from the outer stars in the galaxy. It's supposedly spinning faster than it has a mass to keep together. And I've always thought that, based on the different theories and the problems with them, that there might be a problem with the redshift. And I would just like to comment on that if there is a problem with the redshift, that would change whether there is dark matter. It would also change the size and age of the universe. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. 1-800-999-8255. First, David Spergel, let me ask you about this theory that's been promulgated in a recent book about the speed of light having been different possibly at the first few moments after the Big Bang. Do you think that holds water?
Well, it's a theory that it's possible, but at the moment I would not call it very compelling. It's a theory that does not really make much in the way of testable predictions, and it's one, you know, we have actually measured the speed of light quite accurately in the nearby universe. We have things like supernova explosions or gamma ray bursts, and we have a sudden explosion, and we can see that light arrives at the same time at, say, visible and radio and X-ray frequencies, and that tells us that the speed of light is about the same at all these different frequencies. So this is actually the kind of thing that we, not with this experiment, but astronomers doing other kinds of experiments, test on some of the questions we ask. Mm-hmm. The dark matter is something that we all find so disturbing that we see something like this, that we've actually looked for it in many different ways. The gentleman mentioned this Doppler effect, which is one way, but we actually infer the presence of dark matter through looking at hot gas in galaxies. We measure the gas temperature. That's a very different effect. We look at how mass curves space through something called gravitational lensing. This is the effect that was first used to test the theory of general relativity back in 1919, I think. And we look at how galaxies lens background objects, measure their mass that way. The way we measure the mass in the MAP experiment and for the density of dark matter depends on something very different from the gravitational lensing. It's actually mostly sensitive to how bright our hot and cold spots are and relies on very different type of physics.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, given how strange dark matter is, we've been, you know, all worrying about this a lot and keep trying to find new ways of seeing that there is indeed dark matter there. We keep getting the same answer.
Well, let me see if I can go to one more call before we have to leave. Let's go to Cliff in St. Louis. Hi, Cliff.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Yeah, I had two questions. One, going back to...
Give me your best one.
So what surrounds the singularity that's pre-Big Bang? What's around this singularity?
Well, in the Big Bang theory, if we extrapolate back to the past, the universe gets denser and denser. If we extrapolate back to, of course, 380,000 years, we get the conditions we see in the microwave experiment. Go further back in time, eventually, in the first moment of the Big Bang, you get back to infinite density. That's what we call a singularity. Whenever you have singularities in physics, that's really telling you that your knowledge of physics is breaking down. So what's happening is our two great ideas of 20th century physics, quantum mechanics and general relativity, conflict. They don't give you a consistent answer when you get to these very high densities and temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's telling us we need a theory of quantum gravity. And much of the effort in particle physics in the past couple decades has been to derive a theory of quantum gravity, and string theory is that effort. That's the best attempt we have.
We measured as far back as you could go. Do we know how big the universe is now?
We only know that the universe is bigger than we can see. So the universe, we can look back 13.7 billion years, so that we can see a patch that's basically 13.7 billion light years across. And on the scale of the piece we see, it looks infinite in all directions. Now, it could be that the universe is just a little bit bigger than that. We haven't seen that. Or it could be that the universe is indeed infinite. We don't know that yet.
Boy, finding the questions more exciting than actually getting the answers, isn't it?
Well, it's all fun.
All right, Dr. Spergel, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to have you back and talk lots more about this. We've run out of time.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck to you. David Spergel is professor of astrophysics at Princeton University, and he's a member of the WMAP team, which was bringing back those fantastic images and information about the universe. We're going to take a short break and change gears.